As complex and intricate as life can be, we often have a tendency to apply direct binary maxims to simplify it all. Either ors, black or white, A or B. And I am no different. For me, I have a few precepts I employ when out in the world. I believe there are two kinds of people. People who do and people who do not. Let me be more specific. Everyone is an active, creative, engaged, contributing human being. Past our individual daily grinds, we all have our passions, our muses, our preoccupations that invigorates and buoys our spirits. Maybe it's writing poetry, maybe it's knitting, maybe it's playing tennis, singing in the shower, whatever it is. But the moment which separates the people who do and the people who do not is when a person decides to take their obsession, their passions, their private personal work, and hang it up and out into the world, risking public flagellation and derision in hopes of adulation and acceptance. It's a very scary and vulnerable feeling when you put something out into the world for all to see in hopes of gaining acceptance. We all do it, whether it's a band's new record or an illustrator's new piece of art. No matter how long you've been in the game and no matter how much success you've achieved, every participant in this ongoing dog and pony show has an equal amount of nervousness. When it is received favorably, the feeling is one of elation, but when it is negatively received, it can be the worst feeling in the world. Knowing how much it takes to step into the public eye, I have an immediate, automated, almost unconscious respect for anyone who has enough courage to do so. I instinctually root for underdogs, especially when their attempt is so gallant and their fall so flamboyant. Case in point, Jan Terry. You don't know Jan Terry? Jan Terry is a singer who achieved viral video fame on YouTube with her song Losing You. It has achieved the status of worst video ever made, and she has been ridiculed and sneered at endlessly for this video, as well as for her singing and her appearance. If you haven't seen it by now, log on to YouTube immediately and type in Jan Terry Losing You, J-A-N-T-E-R-R-I, Losing You. Laugh if you will, but this is a legitimate song off her 1993 album, Baby Blues. There are also other videos on there from her discography, which number 5 releases. Baby Blues from 93, High Risk from 94, Wild One from 2012, No Rules from 2013, and Holiday Songs from 2014. Videos like Baby Blues, My Little Brother, Journey to Mars, Ave Maria, Get Down Goblin, Skyrockets, and many more are up there for your perusal. Look, I'm not going to lie. I laughed my ass off when I first saw Losing You, as did every single person I know who saw it. I laughed so hard that I kept hitting refresh, and I'd probably seen Losing You easily 20 times. But after a while, as is often the case with repetition, something that Top 40 radio employs, I started to actually like it. I like Losing You, and I like Jan Terry. I watched her other videos for songs like Baby Blues and Journey to Mars. I listened to album cuts. Look, she's not going to win any Grammys or any Mercury or Polaris prizes anytime soon, but there is a legitimate place for her and her music. If fandom for Jan Terry isn't achieved through the actual music itself, one can argue her earnestness, her sincerity, her innocent keenness, as well as her strength of character and conviction to continue to make music, despite universal denigration, is enough to earn her a place, if not in people's music collections, at least in people's hearts. Okay, I'm not sitting there stroking my chin and analyzing her tunes. You know, I'm smiling and laughing. But to me, she has achieved the pinnacle of outsider music status and deserves a place alongside people like Daniel Johnston, Jad Fair, Jandek, Wesley Willis, Tiny Tim, and the Shags. There are a lot of people I've had on this podcast where I can't believe I got them on. But Jan Terry, to me, is a person from another realm. And she's this episode's guest. It's surreal. One thing that struck me while getting ready to talk to her and watching YouTube interviews with Jan was the disgusting way that some people treated her. Just because you find her music amusing doesn't give you any right to treat her the way I heard her treated during some of these interviews. Some interviewers were completely disrespectful, utterly juvenile, making fun of Jan to her face, or worse, humoring her and off mic huddling up to high-five each other at her expense. For some reason, I immediately felt protective of her. Also, the amount of insulting comments online are enough to just lose your faith in humanity. It's admirable that she powers through it all. And look, if you actually made the effort to go online and insult this woman who is doing nothing wrong but making music, to simultaneously paraphrase and directly quote Ian MacKaye from Fugazi, and this is a quote from a Minor Threat song, at least she's trying. And my question to all the haters would be, what the fuck have you done? If life can indeed be distilled into two groups, I'm proud to be part of Jan's, the ones that do. There is an interesting connection between this podcast and Jan Terry. One of the first people to ever upload the Losing You video on YouTube was someone named Jimmy Buffalo, and he did it 10 years ago. In the video's description, Jimmy Buffalo credits the video rip from TV Carnage. And if you are a regular listener to this podcast, you will know that TV Carnage is a series made by none other than Derek Beckles, past guest of this podcast. And more recently, Derek had Jan on his Hot Package Adult Swim show that we mentioned during the episode. An interesting 6 degrees of Jan Terry in action here, and I just wanted to mention that. This podcast is supported by Blue Mic Microphones and Skull Candy Headphones. Please leave a rating or a review in iTunes if you could. It helps the podcast's profile and helps bring in more listeners. I must say that I'm very touched by all the positive reviews up there. Recently, I was out and about and someone came up to me and said he loved the podcast. And I'm genuinely surprised, taken aback, and I'm flattered when anyone says that about the podcast. I'm sitting here doing the intro to this episode, and I'm convinced that I'm the only one that I'm talking to, you know, so I'm glad that people are actually listening. Okay, here we go. Jan Terry, the legendary Jan Terry, is this episode's guest on the official Danko Jones podcast, and it starts now. The Danko Jones podcast is the best around. Nick Flanagan is Danko's co-host. Tell him for free. I'm so glad I like to sometimes. Damn it, from fucked up. Stop playing. Hang down. Do. The Danko Jones podcast is the best around. Nick Flanagan is Danko's co-host. Download for free on SoundCloud and iTunes. Sometimes Damien from fucked up. Stops by and hangs out too.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, get ready because the Danko Jones podcast starts. No, no, no.
Hey, it's Danko Jones calling.
Yeah, okay, you all ready to sit and rock and roll?
All right, yeah. Well, first of all, I want to say thank you for talking to me today. I know you seem to be pretty hectic and busy these days, but I just wanted to talk to you and to talk about your career and music and all your songs and your albums, et cetera, et cetera. I'm a big fan. And
thank you.
I have this podcast, and you know, I've interviewed a whole bunch of people, talked to a whole bunch of people, but Getting the message from you after I reached out to you was my heart just leaped, knowing that I was closer to talking to you. So I just want to say before we start, thank you so much. This is a real thrill and an honor to talk to you.
Hey, I'm nobody famous. I'm just like you and me. I'm just a down to earth person.
Well, that's the feeling that I get when you know, I did a little bit of research past the videos.
It's me that answers the emails, and it's me that answers the Facebook. I don't have any secretary or anything in it.
Right, right. Well, past the music, I did a little research, and in doing so, you know, I watched a few interviews and all that stuff, and I really just got this feeling that you are just very genuine, very down to earth, and very sincere about who you are and about the music that you make.
Well, I try to make music to make people happy. I mean, you know, it's hectic out here, and with this stupid election going on, everybody's stressed out, and you know, so I just try to have my music be happy, and I'm not a very complex songwriter. It's more like, I would say, like the Beatles, and I like Barry Manilow, and his music was pretty good. I like a very versatile music. I mean, I like all different types of music.
Well, that kind of shows when you even listen to not just all your albums, but even on one album, the genres that you mix up song to song, track to track, can be anywhere between, like, one song is a country song, the next song is like a Celtic infused song, the next song is a pop song, the next song is a rock song, the next song is an even heavier rock song, you know, and then you go back to pop again. And then you also take on, like, holiday music, which is a kind of a genre unto itself, which I think is kind of cool that you did that, because it's a novelty
I was going to have an album that had for the whole year, you know, like a song for January, February, March, April, you know, everything.
I noticed that with holiday songs, which you released in 2014, right?
Because I had Get Down Goblin and Rock and Roll Santa back in 93. They were on a cassette, and then I finally added them to the Wild One, and then it came Excuse My Christmas, and then The Count is the B-side of the Get Down Goblin. But technically, The Count was, I started to write The Count first, and I tossed it in a drawer, and I forgot about it. So Get Down Goblin came. So technically, The Count follows the Get Down Goblin.
Yeah, because is The Count even included on, The Count is on Holiday Songs, so, yeah. So
Count's on Holiday Songs, and The Count is also on the No Rules album, I believe.
Because
the Wild One album was, might even be on the Wild One album.
Yeah, I noticed that there's like double songs on certain albums and stuff.
Right. The Wild One album was done in Nashville, so that's mostly country.
Right. Now, can we go back to like 93, 94? Because I feel that in 93 and 94, you were very fertile with music coming. There's a lot of, you're very prolific with a lot of your music at that time. Those two records were put out, your first one, Baby Blues, and what was it, High Risk? And
right,
a lot of the videos were that everybody knows on YouTube were from those kind of 93, 94 years. So what was going on with you that you were able to come up with all this music within these, like, kind of 1 or 2 years?
Well, 92, seriously, I started the White 92 album, which was Baby Blue, but it got released in 93. And then while I was working on 93, I wrote some more songs for 94. I was trying to go in as a songwriter, and that's how I was trying to go in. And Baby Blues, they all think it's a R&B song, so they used to put me in the R&B section, but it isn't.
Right.
It's in pop. And the other thing is people in the music industry, because I was working with my friends at, before it was Wells Records, and they said that the record company says you need to put out video. And being that I went to Columbia College and
I majored in broadcast and film and TV and that stuff. So I got a hold of Mike, who was just video. Mike was just simply videotaping bands when they performed, and I asked him if he wanted to do something different. So that's how I got Mike involved.
Who's Mike?
Mike was my director and cinematographer that made the videos.
Okay, now, something that a lot of people don't realize, when you make a video, it costs a lot. And usually the costs are eaten up by, you know, the record company takes care of that. Now, you were, if correct me if I'm wrong, but you were pretty much an independent artist making a lot of videos. I mean, there's a lot of videos around that time. How are you financing all of this?
I financed it myself in plus two. Mind you, being that I went to Columbia College and I majored in TV, film, and that, I had that background in it. And plus two, mind you, I had to do it on a lower budget than the record labels. The record labels can dish out thousands and millions of dollars, and I had to do it on a shoestring type of a budget, which is more, mine is more realistic looking. We don't have, you know, so, I mean, yeah. I went out and shot quotations and got the permissions for where I'm shooting it at.
That's the thing.
And
that
I lined up my friends and stuff like that. And mine realistically cost me less money than people that spend, that the record labels spend a lot of money. And some of those artists that spend a lot of money on their videos, tell you the truth, they suck. And they spend millions of dollars.
And they don't get as many hits as yours do.
Right.
Now
mine's real. Mine, I, you know, light makeup, and other than the girl had my hair like Dolly Parton and the people back in the 80s wheel up. But that's my own natural hair and my own clothes, and we try to make it more realistic.
Well,
we shot it in a day.
Well, which one are you specifically referencing? All of them or Losing You? Or?
All of them were shot in a day. The only thing Journey to Mars had to do was Mike did extra stuff, you know, in the editing. But all my videos and I sing the song, it's just shot in one day.
You shot each video in a day.
Yes.
Stuff.
It's possible. It's possible. It can work. I prove it. It can work. It's just, yeah. You know, you just do it, and you just do, realistically, maybe we just do one or two takes. That's it. We don't spend hours of rehearsing and stuff like that. We just shoot.
Right. One take, and then move on to the next shot.
Yep.
Okay. So since we're here talking about the videos and about that time period, I can't not ask you about Losing You, which is pretty much the video and the song which you are best known for, and which has made you a YouTube viral sensation. So can you tell me a little bit of the background about Losing You? You know, what's the story behind that song? What's the story behind that video?
Well, Losing You is about you're going with somebody and you had enough of the baloney, and so that's how the song was written. And the only thing is I had to go out and search for locations. And at the time, Oprah Winfrey was using the La Meridian Hotel. So I talked to the general manager, and I asked him if we could shoot there. And I told him it was for promotion, and he says, good. He says, he needs a copy. He says, can I have a copy so he can promote it? For sales meetings, promoting his hotel. And I said, yeah. I said, sure. And then same as like I called United and I asked them if I can shoot stuff at United. And back then, before 9/11, you could go into public places with a camera. But, and mind you, we only go with one camera and we keep it low profile. And it works.
Right.
You know, we don't drag a lot of equipment and stuff with us to because then you have to have a whole bunch of permits and all kinds of stuff.
Right.
Which you I was bounded for losing you. I was bounded for that day, and it was like $1 million bond for the day, and it cost like $400 or $500.
Wow.
Other than that. But other than that,
that's a lot of money.
Well, yeah, because mind you, you have to go to the Illinois Film Office, and then I found those ways around doing it, so I found other ways. But yeah,
well,
they want you to be bounded, and then they also want you to have you're supposed to hire a police officer with you. So if they need streets blocked off, or he's supposed to be there to get people away, but it's like. No, I can do it. I found a way. It could be done. So.
Who's the guy in the video? Who's your like love interest in the video?
It wasn't. His name was Vincent Vinny, and he hung up at the tavern where my dad hanged out at, and we just asked him if he wanted to be in the video because he had a motorcycle, and I just wanted the motorcycle and him in the video.
And there's a shot, many shots, where there's a limo and everything. And I heard you used to be a limo driver. So is that
yes,
have anything?
Yes, and my buddy Tony, he owned his own limo. So he was a limo driver. And then we went to eat lunch at his wife's restaurant. And then we shot some more scenes by the restaurant.
Wow, that's really cool. Okay, so from losing you, you made VHS copies of all these videos like Journey to Mars, Rock and Roll Santa, et cetera, Losing You, and they made their way around. And finally, someone gave Marilyn Manson a copy of your video or videos, and you ended up...
I'll tell you the story about Marilyn Manson. But Losing You and Baby Blues wound up on Beavis and Butthead.
When was that? What year was that?
Must have been like right around like between 93 to 94, somewhere around there.
Oh, wow. Okay, so you had already gotten national coverage on like a big time show by the time 94 rolled around. Wow. Okay. Because most people know you only from the advent of YouTube, myself included. Like, YouTube was posted around 2005,
2006. Right. Mind you, the thing, my videos were on VHS, which is obsolete now and then. But somebody got a copy of the, and then they started posting it on YouTube. So.
Yeah, yeah. Can you tell me the story about you opening up for Marilyn Manson, you and Marilyn Manson?
Right. Marilyn Manson was doing his book signing tour. I think that was back in, 97, 98, that he was doing his, and he happened to go to Tower Records in Bloomingdale, Illinois, and my friend Jimmy was talking to him about me. He put together a little press kit for me, and he gave it to Manson's driver in the limo. And Manson listened to it and watched the video and listened to my music. And a few days before September the 5th, Labor Day weekend, Manson's people called the record company called Jim to get my number because Manson was looking for me. Manson wanted me to sing for Rose McGowan's birthday party, which I did.
And then that wasn't the last time you were associated with Manson,
that,
right?
No, and that's what started it. Then 2 days before his concert in Chicago, he caught up. His people called up and said, Manson, like you do us a favor. I was already going to the concert. I already had VIP tickets, but they called me up and they said, Manson would like you to open for him, and they gave me a 20 minutes. So I was the first person to go on stage, and then behind me was another band, and then Phantom.
Oh, that was amazing. So you did that one show, and you did that birthday party for Rose McGowan.
Right, and then I did such a good job that he asked me, he was doing one in Wisconsin, and said, okay, I did his show in Chicago Friday. Saturday, I had my own gig for Halloween, and then I opened for him again on Sunday in Wisconsin.
That's amazing. That's amazing. And, of course, he was at his height at that time. Like, we're talking, what are we talking here, late 90s?
We were talking about 98, 99. That was the year that they had the Columbine shooting, and a lot of his shows were canceled. Because he would call at the last minute and he'll say, we'll fly out and can you do this? You know, sometimes I'll be his act after he performed. He wanted to unwind, so then I'll put on a 30 to 40 minute show for him and his friends just for them to unwind.
Oh, so you did that as well?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God. So have you been in touch with Manson since then?
No, now that I live in California, I just bumped into Triggy. So Triggy's going to let Manson know I'm here.
Well, that's also how I saw the photo with you and Twiggy on Instagram, and that's kind of what got me to message you. It was
I didn't know Triggy's real name.
On Instagram. Sorry?
Yeah, I have Instagram. I said I didn't know Triggy's real name. The guy that using one of my music, my one song, If You Want a Divorce, in a documentary, a small movie he's putting together, and Twiggy's doing a lot of music for it. But he mentions Twiggy's real name, and I don't know Twiggy's real name. I only know him as Twiggy.
Right. How did you end up on The Daily Show in 2000?
The Daily people knew that I opened up for Manson, and they were friends with Mancow, and they asked me to, because I used to view Mancow's show too, and they asked if they could come out and videotape me, and they did. So.
I see. And you know, with all the Manson dates that you did, the after shows that you put on, et cetera, et cetera. Now, did you ever get the bug to tour, like go on tour, or have you gone on tour yourself, like Jan Terry tour?
Just smaller gigs, not like the main thing. And plus two, mind you, what's going on in the world with ISIS and stuff like that, an American going overseas, I mean, a lot of people want me overseas, and I'm just a little bit hesitating going overseas right now.
How about a Jan Terry North American tour? Like, I'm in Toronto, and I would definitely go to your show if you were to come to Toronto.
Well, it depends. I was just talking to Denny the Dog. It depends on who becomes our president. Denny and I might move to Canada and become Canucks.
You might become a Canadian citizen. You might become a Canadian resident if who wins?
The one Denny cannot stand. Denny loves Donald Trump. Denny, I've taken Denny on. He's been on a few Trump rallies. Denny loves Donald Trump. He cannot stand Hillary Clinton. So
Denny likes Donald Trump.
Oh yes.
So if Trump wins, you would stay in America, but if Hillary wins, you would move to Canada?
Yeah.
Okay.
Everybody else is the other way around. They go, if Trump wins, they're moving out of the country.
Right.
Me, I'm the other way around. If she wins, I'm moving out of the country.
Right. And we must clarify here, Denny is your dog.
Yes, Denny's a Cubs fan, and he was so happy the Cubs won.
Right.
He's Cubs, and he's a Dodger fan. I personally like hockey, and Canadian has a real good hockey team.
Yeah, there's a few of them.
Yeah, and I like the Wolves, Chicago Blackhawks, and the Nashville Predators.
Right. So. Yeah, you being originally from Chicago.
Yes, I'm not crazy about football, not crazy about basketball, but when we had Michael Jordan in that season when they played against the Utah Jazz, it was a good World Series thing, or NBA series, or whatever they want to call it.
Right. Well,
Denny likes baseball, and I like hockey.
Right. We must stress again, Denny is the dog. Like, you post a lot of photos of Denny, your dog, on Instagram.
Oh, yeah, because right? He's got a lot of fans, too.
Yeah, so he seems to have a complete mind of his own and personality, and he's got his own likes and dislikes when it comes to sports and personalities all on his own.
Yeah, he likes broccoli. He likes cantaloupe. So.
Right.
He likes carrots. Yeah, he's a character.
Well, I want to kind of get back to your music. Now, a lot of people don't realize this, and I know this, but aside from singing on a lot of your music, you also play drums on a lot of the tracks. Am I right or am I wrong?
You're correct. You're right. I was 1980 Illinois state champ.
Sorry?
I was 1980 Illinois state champ for playing the drums.
Oh, wow. Wow,
and that was the same year I also went into one of Taekwondo karate tournament. Taekwondo is Korean karate. Those tournaments are not like you see that Karate Kid. It's slightly different.
Right.
So, and I got a trophy. A trophy there.
You won a tournament or something?
Yes.
Wow. Okay, I want to kind of get into a little bit of the minutia of your discography. So I just wanted to ask you, so between High Risk, which was released in 1994, I think, right, to Wild One, which was released in 2012, that's like an 18-year gap. What was the reason for this long gap? Were you not doing music? Yeah. Like, why such a long
Wild
period?
Wild One was technically done – in 97 or 94 or something down in Nashville, and it just wasn't released. Same with like the No Rules album. It was done in Chicago. I did the vocals in Nashville, and then getting the people they couldn't find it. Then when they find it, they were supposed to mix it for me, and I had to go down to Nashville and bring it, and I had it mixed in out in California.
But why such a long period? Why didn't she just put it out in, well, 98 or 99 when you were, like, Marilyn was having you open for them and you were kind of hot back then?
I wasn't really hot back then, but money-wise, because mind you, I'm the one flipping the bill for all this stuff.
Right, okay, I gotcha.
Yep.
But now, like ever since 2012 with Wild One, you put that out, and then you followed it up with No Rules a year later, and then Holiday Songs, which is really just a compilation, a year after that in 2014. So you've been fairly prolific since 2012. Now it's 2016. Am I wrong to assume that there's no new material from you, or are you working on stuff?
There's a couple new songs. I just have to go in the studio and record them. And then I'm waiting. My friend in Chicago is doing my biography book, and he still hasn't finished it for me. And he's also doing the documentary, so he wants to get them both together at the same time. That's what I'm waiting for.
And that's something I noticed is it's been a couple of years that both projects have been in the works, right?
Yep.
And they're still going. You still plan to release these two projects, the documentary film and the biography.
Yes, as soon as, you know, but it's not up to me. because they're the ones finishing it, and when they get it done, it gets done.
Right. Now, I know that you have a Bandcamp page, and that's really a good thing for any kind of musician or band to have in 2016. It's an easy way for people to buy your music, to access your music. But I was wondering, I know you've put out, your first two albums were issued out on CD, but I was wondering, now that, you know, 2016, nobody really makes CDs anymore, do you have any plans on reissuing any of these albums on vinyl, like a hard copy of a Jan Terry album?
Probably down the road, I think. But right now, you can just get it, you know, download. That's how we have it set up.
I can't believe that no record label has shown any interest in reissuing your albums.
Well, I'm not, like I said, I'm not big enough. I'm not probably not good enough for them, so.
That is insane. I mean, like, I don't know. I think there would be, perhaps not enough labels know that your discography is really kind of up for reissuing. Maybe they just don't know that they can do it. But hopefully people, the word will get around, and maybe there'll be a record label that'll want to reissue your
album. Yeah, the only thing I was doing was Hot Package for 2 years, and we're waiting for them to come up with season 3. And then I'm in that cameo of that movie, Aloha, by Cameron Crowe.
Right, yes, Aloha, yes. And I must say that Derek Beckles from Hot Package has been on this podcast twice.
And he's a great guy. I like him. I got a Success Award that's supposed to be better than an Oscar. It's something that Hot Package people put together. And I go, this is better than an Oscar.
How did Derek reach out to you? How did he find you, or how did you find him? What's that connection with Hot Package?
Derek was going through videos, and he liked my Losing You video. And then the same time, there was this other girl in New York that he liked. She had something about being a beautician, something about, and then they had us on the show, and we were like battling against one another.
I see. Oh, I see. Like kind of like a viral video championship sing-off or something.
Yeah, the way they did it. And it was just a one-day shoot. And what else? And Alan Thicke was there on the set. And I got to meet him.
Oh, that's so cool. Well, you know what, Jan? I'm Canadian. I'm talking from Toronto. Derek is Canadian, and Alan Thicke is from Canada. He's Canadian. You are surrounded by Canadians.
The only one I can't stand that's a Canadian is your Justin Bieber. I can't stand him.
Well, you know what you should do? If you can't stand him so much, cover him and beat him at his own songs.
I can't stand and sing. I just can't stand the guy. Not at all. Oh. Hey,
well,
the only song I liked when he first came out, I thought he was an okay guy. I thought, okay, he was a cute little kid, and, you know, his song was good. But then after a while, he became a jerk. I can't deal with it. So.
Well, yeah. You know what? The thing with Justin Bieber is I think he had to grow up in the public eye. And when you get that much adoration, and you're growing up and you don't know how to deal with it, you stumble along the way. I think he did it publicly.
Well, I mean, you can grow up sensible. There are people that have grown up in the industry that are decent people, and there's people that grow up in the industry that are just jerks. I mean, so.
True enough.
Depends on the person.
True enough.
Depends on the person.
Yeah.
And
now,
just think when you take away the fame and you take away the money, they're just like you and I. They're nothing special. So that's how you look at it.
Yeah, exactly. Now, what do you have in store? I know you got the documentary film, you've got the biography, you've got a few songs that you're working on. No album, no concrete like releases for full albums anytime soon. You're just kind of marinating on all this. But is there any way anyone can like reach out to you, like the way I do, but like to have you perform?
Yeah,
you do one-offs.
I haven't been performing any shows right now. Only thing I do is if they want the autographed pictures and they order it at my PayPal address, and then I mail out. I physically take it to the post office, and I whatever message they want on it, I do that, and then I had a few people that want they want like phone calls or something like that, and I do that. The information is on my Facebook page, and it's also on Bandcamp. If you just go under, I think it's under merchandise. It's under Bandcamp too.
Anyone can do a search, Jan Terry, on Google, and I'm sure they'll find the right pages.
Yeah, no, I haven't been feeling well, so that's another thing. I have to take some tests next week, so.
I'm sorry to hear that, Jan. I hope this wasn't too much out of your day.
No. It's fine talking to you. I have no problem with that.
Well, thank you very much, Jan. I really appreciate you talking to me today, and this has been great. So thanks a lot, Jan.
Anytime. So you're in Ontario, so... Isn't it just Montreal's French? Or are you guys French too?
I'm on Eastern time, so it's 3:30 in the afternoon for me.
No, I'm saying, one part of Canada, they speak French. Is it just Quebec or Montreal?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Quebec. I'm in Ontario, so we're English speaking.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good day, mate. Australian.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. You do a lot of impressions too, I was told.
Oh yes, I like some of those old time movies, and sometimes they have it. The best one is the original. Guess Who's Coming to Dinner with Spencer Tracy, Katherine Hepburn, and there's another movie. Her name was Jean Tierney. And the movie was called Laurel, and it also had Vincent Price in it. And then the original Out of Towners with Sandy Dennis and Jack Lemmon.
And you do impressions?
The only one I can do is, oh, you're my knight in shining armor, and I do love you. That's Katherine Hepburn from On the Golden Pond.
That is... surreal and incredible, all at the same time.
Yeah, and then we are superior, seek and destroy. We are the Daleks, exterminate. Oh, the Doctor, he's coming from Doctor Who.
Oh, Doctor Who? Oh,
yeah.
Wow. Okay.
So,
wow.
At least that's some stuff.
That's
cool. And then, I have done the deal with Watergate. I will be your next president.
That's Richard Nixon.
Yes.
Very timely.
Hi there. I'm Jimmy Carter. And peanuts went up thanks to the elephants. But I'm going to be running mate with Richard Nixon, and we'll be running together. Did you picture them two running together?
Right. That's great. Can you do any other presidents? Can you do Donald Trump? Even though he's not president.
Yeah, he should be. Not really. I just know we have a really big show tonight. Really big. Popo Gio will be in the audience today. You tell your mouse. You're kind of young, but Ed Sullivan.
Oh, Ed Sullivan. Oh, okay. That was Ed Sullivan. I know who
Ed
Sullivan is.
Right, and then...
I thought that was Trump.
No, Trump, we're going to make America great again.
Right.
I can't really do Trump. I mean, so.
Right.
It's how he says, we're making America great again. We'll be number one.
Well, I think on that note, it was great having you on the podcast.
Okay.
Sorry?
I got you cracking up. That's a good thing.
Oh, yes. That is great. My favorite one, I think, was the Katharine Hepburn one, right off the top.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's how she talked. Especially on that movie Golden Pond with her head. Henry Fonda, Jane Fonda.
Yeah.
And he had, according to the movie, like Alzheimer's or dementia, and he went off, and then he came back, and he was sitting down, and she bent over, and she goes, "You're my knight in shining armor, and I do love you." So,
that's great. Well, thank you, Jan. Thank you for this.
No problem.
This has been great, and I really appreciate it, and I really do. Like I mentioned in the message, I'm a big fan and really love your stuff.
No, thanks.
All right. And say hi to Denny for me.
I will. Denny, he's just up. Your fans say hello. So also tell his fans out there in Canada that Denny says hello.
All right. Thanks a lot, Jan.
You too. Thanks. Bye.
All right. Bye.
I don't want to lose you tonight.